Shalom Aleichem, Chaver. This is Binyamin Hammer at National Council of Young Israel. I'd like to welcome everyone, certainly welcome Rebbe, Shlita, for being on the call. And we are at the auspicious number of conference call number 100. We cannot thank Rebbe enough and all of the many, many, many Rabbonim and Talmidim who actually emailed me and called me to be part of this and just to say how wonderful it is. So Rebbe, thank you from all of us. And without further ado, thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. It's a very auspicious occasion to have the opportunity to talk to so many wonderful Talmidei Chachamim who want to hear Torah. And I thank Rabbi Hammer for arranging this conference call. I remember when it started as a one-time event. It was in response to some other one-time events, and somehow this one took off. B'liayin hara. So let's begin. Question number one. Recently, the new shadels have a lace top front. The lace top is a band at the front of the hairline that basically makes the shadel look like one's own hair with virtually no ability to distinguish it from a shadel. A website description says, virtually undetectable sheer lace front that gives you a natural-looking hairline creates the appearance of natural hair growth. End quote. Is there a halachic or ashkafic problem wearing these lace top shadels? So, you probably are aware that the whole shadel issue is debatable. Poskim, going back hundreds of years, have debated whether a woman is permitted to wear a shadel. In more recent times, you may be familiar with the opinion of Rabbi Avadi Yosef, Zatzal, and his son of Yitzchak, the new chief rabbi Shalita, who are both unalterably opposed to shadels. I think it's a terrible, terrible thing. In their communities, they only wear a hat or a snood or a kerchief. They will never wear a shetel. But in our part of the world, we follow the Ramah, so the shetel seems to be okay, based on the Shulta Giborim, Masech the Shabbos. Can't go into all those details now. But the reason why the Goli Poskim were opposed to shetel is precisely for this reason, that it looks like the hair of a woman. As a result, it may, quote-unquote, defeat the purpose, in quotes. So what is the purpose? So normally, when it comes to laws in the Torah, ours is not the reason why. However, my view is that rule only applies to a pasuk mefurish in the Torah. When something is a drasha, so darshin in time of the drasha, I think it's irrelevant in Hilchos Chalamayit. I think it's relevant in Hilchos Nida. I think it's relevant in Hilchos Loses Godadu. All drushes which come up, and we look in the Gemaras, and the Rishonim, and the Poskim, and they say, well, if the reason doesn't apply, da-da, da-da. Here, too, of course, it's a drusha based on Upora Es Rosh Isha. Mikan says the Gemara Ksubas Ayin Beis, that the Benos Yisrael is supposed to cover the hair, have the hair covered. Yeah, a whole tumult with the Benos Yisrael means married women. Some even say extends to singles as a Rambam. Not for now. Psak Halacha is that it applies to married women. And the question, of course, becomes why? So I think I said before on this, one of the previous 99 shiurim, I think I mentioned that there's a story which triggered the response in my mind, which goes back maybe 50 years. There was a wonderful family in Manhattan that was trying to facilitate shidduchim for older singles. They had a very nice penthouse, and they would invite singles older, I think 30 and up, whatever it was, to come to their house. And they would meet, but they needed what they called facilitators. So some of the members of the family and others were facilitators to try to, you know, make introductions between some of the young singles who were maybe not so socially adept to try to help them out. What happened was that the women, the married women, were the more socially adept ones, and the boys, young men, who had no clue who was single, who was married, started talking in a way to these facilitators, which indicated they wanted to get to know them better. They had to say, oh, excuse me, I'm Mrs. X. I'm only a facilitator. You have to look for the other women. But there was a problem. So what did they do? So they decided from then on, when you walk into the house, you have to put something on your lapel. Either you have to have one apple or two apples. If you're attached two apples, should not attach one apple. And the light bulb went off in my head, oh, this is the pshat in a shetel, or in a hair covering, put it that way, in a hair covering. Why should a woman who's married cover her hair? So it should be noticeable in an instant whether she's single or married. People talk differently to a single woman as opposed to a married woman. And that's why the hair should be covered. That's why, in my view, by Torah law, this obligation of covering one's hair is limited to Beshuk, as Gemara puts it, in the marketplace when people don't know who's who. If you're in someone's private house, you're more likely to know who's who. It only applies to a woman while she is married, as opposed to widow or divorce, where, although the poskim say she should cover her hair, that's not by Torah law. And by Torah law, it's enough to cover the majority of her head, even though part of the head and all the hair which sticks at the bottom is uncovered. As long as you cover the majority of the head, it's noticeable she's a married woman. That's why I always thought it's a pshat. It's my suggestion. I can't say for sure. But if I'm right, I think that these kinds of shadows do present the problem. Again, let's not forget, Rabbi Avadia and his son, they think all shadows are no good because he can't tell if it's her hair or not. So we are more lenient because we think that typically a shadow you can tell. You can tell it's a shadow. But if you can't tell at all it's a shadow, it seems to me it's defeating the purpose, as I understand the purpose, of the woman who's married cover her hair. And if it's possible that even those who disagree with Rabbi Avadia might agree in this particular case. Having said all this, it's not for me to make an absolute prohibition where apparently, from what I understand, this new type of shaila is very widespread among women who are Shomer Shabbos and Shomer Kashrus and Shomer Taras HaMishpacha, holy Jewish women. And for some reason, they think this is a good thing. So it's not for me to pronounce or promulgate the prohibitions. But it seems to me that if somebody asked me, I would not be a fan of such kind of a shetel. I think the shetel should be nice, but it should be clear that it's a shetel. It's not the person's natural hair. Number two, when there are 10 people in shul, but two daven shachar shmona esrei earlier, 10 and 30 minutes before, can they be counted as 6/7 needed to chazor hashatz, i.e. 4 people daven shmona esrei together afterwards? The short answer is no. No. The Mishnah Berurah and Siman Samech Tesef Kot Aleph, admitting it to follow the Radvaz against the Mechaber. According to the Mechaber, you can always do Chazor HaShatz. But according to the Mishnah Berurah, who signed Radvaz and disagreed, you require 6 people davening together at the same time. If you don't have it, I would not do Chazor HaShatz in this circumstance. 3. Can kids age 9 plus or young men age 13, 16 play basketball in shul on Shabbos? The shul is in an enclosed gate. Do we say that since basketball is never played on dirt, that there's no gzera of mashve gumos? I do believe, blessed be what be. If yes, can they play football on synthetic turf, fake grass? Before we get to this specific issue of mashve gumos, it's a broader issue. The broader issue is, it's fairly well known, the Yerushalmi says in Masechta Tainis, Perek Dalet Halacha Hey, a town called Tur Shimon was destroyed because they played ball on Shabbos. And therefore, it's certainly not appropriate for anyone over the bar mitzvah to play ball on Shabbos. We have to try to teach our youngsters to do something else, ideally, as the Rishami says, for nitna Torah, no nitna Shabbos Yisrael, ugly yaskim a Torah. That's the ideal. If they can't learn Torah, let them read something else, even if it's something which is a... not a holy book. We'll call it a neutral book. They can't even do that. They have to let them play a board game or something like that. But playing ball is something which is simply not appropriate over by mitzvah. It seems to me that having it done in shul is worse. It's parfarhesia. Worse. Nonetheless, for little children under by mitzvah, it's hard to make an absolute prohibition. If you look in Shmir Shabbos Kilchosa, Perek Tezayin, Sif Aleph and Sivav, he only prohibits for kids under bar mitzvah soccer. Because soccer you play on the dirt or on the grass. And therefore there is a Shemayash Gumos, but basketball, as the questioner mentioned, is never played on dirt or grass. That prohibition does not exist. So therefore, kids under bar mitzvah, if you can't get them to do better things on Shabbos, there's no prohibition. However, football, it seems to be, is not allowed. Because football, like soccer they call in Israel, it's called kadoregel. They call it football. We call it soccer. But what we all call football, it's the same thing. It's typically played on grass. It's played on earth. And therefore, even if it's fake grass, it's still not allowed. They used to call it astroturf. It's still not allowed, as it's the Shmir Shabbos is right over there. Even if it's asphalt or cement, if it's sometimes done on grass or on earth, it's not allowed even on cement grass or what they call here fake grass, synthetic turf. Number four, can kids use a trampoline that sits on dirt on Shabbos? The weight of jumping pushes the metal frame into the dirt, creating a deep indentation in the dirt. Is this a problem of choresh? So it seems to me, the Shmir Shabbos discusses this as well, in a somewhat different context, of a baby carriage. In Perek Chof Ches, Sif Mem Ches, Ha'ara Kuv Gimel, quotes from Shlomo Zalman, Zeichet Tzadik Levrocha, we're still in the Shiva for his holy daughter, Rebbetzin Rachel Goldberg, the Almana of Rebbe Zalman Nechemia, Zeichet Tzadik Levrocha. My son just called me from the Shiva a little while ago. I was able to be Menachem on the phone. An outstanding woman, incredible Isha Tzedekis, Chachoma, who we just lost to COVID, and though COVID is not the topic of these questions, I have to say again, we have to be careful. We have to be careful. In this past week alone, we've lost so many great people, so many that some of the men whom I knew, even extended family members, and a great Talmid Chachomim, great people. We have to be careful, Rabbosai. Please remember that. Anyway, back to the question at hand. So Rav Shlomo Zalman was matir in the case of a baby carriage, which is a similar question, that the wheels of the carriage can make an indentation in the ground. He said, number one, we're not even sure that it moves dirt, which is called certain kind of dirt, which is with this ripui ara, which is kind of a choresh. Maybe he's in the first place. And number two, it's a psikresha de lo nichole, which according to many poskim is permissible, especially with the rabbonim. Number three, it's a mekalkel. So therefore, for all these reasons, Rav Shlomo Zalman was makel by the baby carriage. I believe the same logic would apply to the trampoline as well. Five. Some have suggested that adding water to mouthwash or mouthwash to water, the problem of molded reich. What do I think about this? Once again, we go to the Shmir Shabbos Kulchasa. This is three in a row. Perek Yudalet Sif Mem Aleph. All the sources are from the new edition. If you have the older one, it's nearby. They're not too far apart. He quotes a machlokes about this in footnote Kufyud, I believe it is. Shlomo Zalman again, Zechatzal Devrocha, wants to try to find a possible heter. Based on a funny place, a Mishnah Brura in Hilchos Nesias Kapayim, Simen Kuf Chof Ches Sivkot Chof Gimel, as a machloikis, in the olden days they would wash the Kohanim on Yontif with scented water. So the question is, may you put the scent in the water to then use it to wash the hands of the Kohanim? Says the Mishnah Mazam, that's a machloikis. But there's a purpose. You're looking for the scent. You want to make a scent in the water to make a scent in the Kohen's hands. In our case, we're not interested in making a scent in the water. The purpose is that the mouthwash is too strong and concentrated, and you want to dilute it a little bit. That's what you're trying to do. You have no kavana that the mouthwash should give a smell in the water. Shlomo Zalman says maybe even the machmirim in Kufchav Chesiv Kufchav Gimel will be makel over here. In any event, the paskins, it's better, because the question gives two possibilities, it's better to pour the water onto the mouthwash, and not the reverse. Gives a comparison to Sharatzian Shinyud Chesiv Kodin Samach. It's a different case about Tzviya, about coloring things. If you have to aim Tzviya B'Ochlin, it's still better to put the color first and then the water, as opposed to the other way around, and here as well. Question 6. Someone is making aliyah with their family. 4 children. Chinuch, every dollar counts. The company which ships the lift told him that funds are available to defray the cost. These funds come from 2 groups of Christians. And he asked me, is there anything wrong with these groups and taking money from them to defray the cost of the lift? The shipping company writes, there are no strings attached. There's a question that's come up a while ago. It seems to me that, strictly speaking, it would be permissible. It's not exactly a great idea. But in a situation where every dollar counts, it's a chinuch, I think he's permitted to do it. If someone has enough money, just looking for a freebie, I would say it's better to stay away. Question 7. I found a coat in my house with a $20 bill in it. The coat does not belong to me. We asked a few people that may have come to my house, and they said, all said it's not theirs. We received 2 large bags of donated clothes and sort through, and it's possible it came from there. We reached out to the person that donated the clothes, and they said it was not theirs either. What should be done with the coat, and what should be done with the $20 found in the pocket? Can we give it away, or do we need to keep it at Chiyova Elio? That's an excellent question. The Mefarshim is a beautiful sefer called Hashavas Saveda Kilchosa. Wants to know where the thousands of items that are supposed to be held on to Chiyova Elio over all the generations, where are they? So he gives certain leniencies. You're not required to keep these Chiyova Elio. You're allowed to just get rid of it. And any money you make from it, you should hold on to in case someone comes and claims it. That would presumably would apply over here as well. I think it probably came from someone who donated clothes. If the house is a house where they keep donated clothes, even though the fellow particular donated these clothes, says it wasn't theirs, maybe he got it from somebody else. He's passing it along. Maybe somebody else donated clothes in this house and gave them a while before. And I think that the coat should be given to the same place where they give all the other donated clothes. They should give this coat there too. And the money they should give to Tzedakah. Question 8. Can we borrow oil or any item and then replace it with a better brand? What if the better brand is on sale? B, can one return a bigger onion than they borrowed? Does calling it a gift help? This is a very serious question. The Rambam writes in Yoredeisim and Kuf Samar Beis Sif Aleph, Kikar Bekikar. Ordinarily, you're not allowed to borrow an item, even if you're going to give back exactly the same item. Not an inch or an ounce more. That's called saw besaw. And the reason is in Yisrael Rabbanon, because the price can go up. So if I borrow a pound, I buy something which is in a pack. I borrow a pound of sugar. I give you back a pound of sugar. So now the pound of sugar is worth X dollars. And when I give it back a week later, it could be worth X dollars and 10 cents. So it's a question of ribbis. So saw b'saw is not allowed on level of rabbanon. Says the Shulchan Aruch based on the Gemara. Kikah b'kikah is a davar mu'ad lo kapti. So it's okay. There's a beautiful sefer called Divrei Sofrim on Hilchos Ribbis. There in the Emek Dover, he says it's only true in a situation where you're giving back a kikar. You don't measure how big the kikar is. It's true. The kikar you give back may be a little bit bigger than the kikar that you received. You don't know exactly. But if you give it back when you know for sure that it's bigger, that's not allowed. He's only matter. It's what's called EF Shalitzam Sam. You don't know exactly how big the kikar was, and you don't want to shortchange the guy. So if you go a little bit over, it's not noticeable, then he says it's okay. So you try to give back exactly what you took without any noticeable increase. Not noticeable increase in the size, that's the bigger onion, nor in the type, that's the better brand. The Sefer Toras Ribbis, another beautiful Sefer, Perek Zayin, Sifkon Zayin, says, you know, if people are not makbid, I borrow an apple, give it back an apple. They're not makbid if the apple's bigger or the apple is smaller. They're not going to scream, you gave away, you gave me a smaller apple. So it shows that these are considered to be identical. Even though in point of fact, one's a little bit bigger, one's a little bit smaller, it wouldn't be a problem. And there's another beautiful sefer called the Mishnas Ribbis. There in Perek Vav Sivkot and Hey, he wants to be matter in such a case based upon the Rajba in Shabbos Kufim Chesam and Aleph, that it's approximately the same, it's okay. And he counts the opinion of the Taz as an additional consideration. In Simon Kuf Samach Sivkot and Vav, who says that you're giving back the whole thing at once. You're not getting back $100 and later give back $1. let's say the guy borrowed, I don't know, $9.90. You give it a $10 bill. It's a davar mu'at. It's just a matana. You're not interested in the exchange. And I'm a farish. The tzitzis is mekil, and that kula may another tziruf, another possible leniency in our situation. 9. Is there an issue of ribbits with driving carpool? For instance, if others did more than me, absolutely no issue. It seems to me. Because carpool, as you know, for those who have driven carpool, is a complex situation. I've driven carpool. In the old years, I drove a lot of carpool. And I was very happy to drive carpool. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Brachos Daf Yud Zayin that Noshim v'may kazachim, that they take the children to learn. So I said, why should this be only for women? Men can also get a schus of taking children to learn Torah. So I drove carpool a lot. We all kinds of complicated systems. Who should drive this? I drove 4 days a week, and someone else drove on Fridays, and someone else drove back. Oh, kinds of cheshbonos. Nothing to do with what we call in Hilchos Ribbis agar natar. Agar natar means, you know, you'll pay me back more because you're doing. I'm doing it first. You're doing it later. That was not a cheshbon whatsoever. It's just an arrangement of who does what when. I believe that it's nothing to do with ribbis whatsoever. 10. Virtual Megillah reading on Purim is when Yotza hearing the Megillah being read over Zoom or over a microphone. Rove Poskim say no, and we mentioned the name of Shlomo Zalman before 2-3 times, and mention it again. Shlomo Zalman, that Tzal was very much opposed to any of these kinds of electronic transmissions. He felt it's not the real voice. He said that those who disagreed didn't know the science. Shlomo Zalman had a lot of science knowledge based on those who advised him. Is very, very strongly against it. Having said that, there are great, great gedolim who felt that, you know, if there's nothing else, it's better than nothing. Maybe there's a chance of Yotzi. In this list are included two of the most unbelievable gedolim of last generation, the one before. Rav Moshe, who suggests that maybe it could be Yotzi Megillah in a microphone, maybe. And the Chazon Ish, which is, I believe, quoted in Rav Shlomo Zalman's Svarim, that he thought maybe he didn't want to rule it out completely. They didn't say yes. They said, you know, maybe better than nothing. Seems to me, therefore, that the proper response should be that everybody should hear the Megillah in person, directly in person. And the people are looking for mitzvahs to do on Purim this year, in the absence of all the other festivities, which should not be done because of COVID, that's a good mitzvah to do. Read the Megillah for somebody else. I myself, last Purim night, our yeshiva canceled the chagiga. What did I do? I went to the house, to the apartment house of somebody who was already there in quarantine. He was a Rebbe in Westchester County. He stayed behind the door. I read it in the apartment house in the hallway. And with another individual who was also in quarantine, and that individual came and sat behind me back to back, facing the other way, and heard me read the Megillah. And then subsequently, I went to the house of a woman who just had a baby. I read the Megillah again for her and for another woman who was compromised. So that's a mitzvah to do on Purim. That's a real mitzvah. Go around and read the Megillah to anybody who needs the Megillah who can't come out. They're unable for the quarantine. The law doesn't allow them to leave the house. Or they're compromised and it's not safe to leave the house. That's a big mitzvah. People looking through mitzvah on Purim this year, but they can't do other mitzvahs. This is a mitzvah to do. So that's what should be arranged, even though it's difficult. So you can, you know, it's going to be over time. There's enough time both at night. It's still a standard time this year. So Purim starts fairly early. And you can have a whole night until people go to sleep. And you have the whole day. It's Erev Shabbos. People aren't traveling too far. And that's what should be done. What about someone, I can't leave. It can't be arranged. If a rabbi would ask me, I would say as follows. Look, we all know that in some places they're having Zooms. Whether you like it, don't like it. There's some shuls are offering Zooms. So it can be told to these people, here's a Zoom contact number to this particular synagogue or that synagogue. Let's do it anyway. And if they can't, absolutely impossible for them to hear the Megillah in person. So they will rely on the possibility within Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish. So again, it's only a possibility that one can be used in that fashion. The reason I prefer it Because if the shul rabbi himself arranges his own Zoom, my fear is that people who really could hear it in person will say, why should I bother? I have a Zoom, it's much easier. And I'm afraid that next year it's going to happen again. Look, we thought last year, last Purim, who thought that we saw this situation this coming Purim? No one ever dreamt it would be a year-long disaster, Magefa. So, I mean, who knows what's going to be next year? And then people can just say, oh, I did Zoom last year, I'll do Zoom this year, even though the corona is long over. And that's my concern. So what exists, exists. I would say it's better that the individual should not sponsor their own Zooms. Again, if there's pressure from the balabata, they have to do it, they can do it. But it's better not to do it if you can avoid doing it. Question number 11. To one accept Mishloach Manos from someone who owes him money? What if there are other reasons he could be giving to Mishloach Manos? Good question. It says in Shulchan Aruch Yehudei Simen Kuf Stam Achsiv Vav, it's Aser, if you give the money Bishvil Ma'osav, because he lends you the money. That's talking about Mugdemes and Mukheres, before or after. But while you still have his money, it's Aser in all cases. Only possibility is, based upon what we have in Shulchan Aruch, there's Siv Zayin. The situation is somebody is rugged. You're typically doing this favor for this individual. Long before you ever borrowed any money, you were doing it. So you may continue to do it. And this beautiful sefer, Mishnas Ribbis, talks about this as well, here in Terek Gimel, Sif Katan Yud Ches. And here's his words. He wasn't used to doing it. Also, the shloach lo koyebe meshach avo. Can't. Now let's do it. But the implication clearly is, if you were ragil, it would be allowed. And what is ragil? He quotes from the Bris Yehuda that it means three times. So I believe if this individual who Reuben borrowed from Shimon money now in the past year, and the last 3 years he's been giving Shalach Manas before he ever borrowed any money, now they're friendly, he can continue to do so. Otherwise, he should not be done. Question number 12. And that's the reason. The reason he did it last year. That's the best reason. 12. Someone paid for a stroller up front. Afterwards, they negotiated and the store added some accessories to the stroller. Then they sent everything. Is this a problem of ribbis? Should the accessories be paid for? In my opinion, it's simply a negotiation. I don't see any agar or not there over here. At the beginning, they didn't decide. They never spoke out the details. It happens all the time in monetary understandings. They don't spell everything out. They paid $100 for a stroller. They didn't discuss, is a stroller has a hood, doesn't have a hood, whatever other accessories that strollers have. So there was a negotiation between the person, the buyer, and the store owner. And then the store owner did the right thing and sent him everything, because you buy a stroller, you have to have the accessories are almost understood to be part of it. He could have put up a fight. He did the right thing and gave him the accessories. I don't think it's ribbis at all. If he would have asked for the accessories then, he would have gotten the accessories. He gets accessories now just because he had his money for a week in his pocket. I don't think it's relevant at all to these negotiations of whether the accessories are part of the stroller or not part of the stroller. I don't think it's an addition. I don't think it's ribbis whatsoever. Question number 13. If a woman began taking contraceptive pills, does she need to keep the vestes the following month? Fundamentally, is the question for a doctor. The doctor says that this particular pill will prevent the period from coming the same day it came. Let's say she had a vestes every 4 weeks or so. She had a period. And the doctor puts her on this contraceptive pill. And says, you know, you lady, you're on this pill, you're not going to have your period at the expected time from previous month. It's going to be, if anything, 2 weeks late. So if the doctor says that, in my opinion, she's not required to worry about the vessels, because the doctor said nothing's happening. The vessels is because you're expecting the period to come. Orach mizman obo. But here, it's not going to come because the doctor said this pill prevents it from coming. And therefore, I believe in that case, you wouldn't have to worry. Of course, if there's no doctor who says that, then you have to worry about it. Question number 14. If one wants to start eating cholov stam, what kind of pesach v'charata is necessary? Would it be a violation of al titosh, admitting mishpacha, Well, can we say that there is no real minig mishpacha being that Europe is different than America? Because of Rav Moshe Zal's heter of the Federal Department of Agricultural Law, which Europe does not have. What Europe has nowadays is certainly irrelevant. Perhaps the more on the point question is, what does Europe have when this fellow's family lived in Europe 90 years ago? That's somewhat relevant. Presumably, in those days, you really were not allowed to have what we call Cholav Stam, because there was not adequate governmental supervision in those days. Rav Moshe is not the only one who was matter based upon governmental supervision. My Rebbe Zal held the same way, and many others. And therefore, it's a machlokas really in din. Not so much a machlokas in minhagim as such. It's a halachic question. Can the government supervision be the equivalent of Cholav Yisroel? That's what Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe's prichodesh says that even if it's not Cholav Yisroel, there's no chashash these days, it's okay. That's not what Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe says it is Cholav Yisroel. It's Cholav Yisroel because we know that no one's mixing any pig milk. How do we know? Because the government said so. And how do we know otherwise? Because you see it. And what if you turn around for a split second? It's still called Kol of Yisrael. So, see here too? The government says it's called Kol of Yisrael. Those who rely on Rav Moshe have every right to rely upon Rav Moshe. The fact that they didn't do it until now, it's not completely clear what the circumstances were. Maybe he thought that Rav Moshe was wrong. Now he thinks Rav Moshe is right. Not that you and I have any to save our bush at the Gadol Hador. But a person, you know, till now I wanted to follow the strict view, and I want to follow, let's say, Rabban Kotler. That's all. He didn't like Rav Moshe's hetzer. So till now I followed the Pesach of Rabban Kotler, and I followed the Pesach of Rav Moshe Feinstein. You can't go wrong if you're such super Gadolim. So you first you followed Rabban's Pesach, and I followed Rav Moshe's Pesach. Nothing to do with the minig as such. So it's not clear to me from the question, you want to start eating Cholav Stam. What happened until now? And they talk about minig mishpacha. So maybe it's referring to a case where the person grew up in a home where they followed the Pesach of Rabarim and they only ate Cholav Yisrael. And now he's getting married. He's starting his own house. And he wants to follow Rav Moshe. Maybe either he's a Talmud Chacham or a Bar Hochi to pass like Rav Moshe. He thinks it's more convincing. Or Stam. He feels affinity to the Pesach of Igros Moshe. Rav Aaron Kotler has only a few tshuvas out there that we know, compared to Rav Moshe has hundreds and hundreds. So he feels that the korov to Rav Moshe's pesukim. Fine. If he only kept the chumah of Rav Aaron and others when he was in his parents' home, that's not binding at all when he gets married. That's a minig mishpacha. Minig mishpacha is not binding. What's binding is a minig hamakom. It seems to me, at least in our communities, there's no minig hamakom about these things. Some people do eat cholav, what they call cholav stam, some don't eat cholav stam. There's no minig hamakom. It's a mixed neighborhood, if you will. And therefore, it seems to me it's every right, and halachically, if you want, to just decide one fine morning, he's going to try to keep other halachas more scrupulously, but he's going to have cholav stam. Having said all this, it seems to me that if a person feels some kind of a pangs of conscience, maybe really was accepted as a quote-unquote minig, he should attempt to get a Torah. So he finds three people. And he says to them, I regret if my conduct until now can be construed as a neder to follow the stricter opinion about Cholav Yisrael as the Chumrah. If so, I regret having taken this so-called neder. He didn't say the word neder, but the fact that he did it three times and didn't say beferish or think beferish otherwise, or maybe once if it was an assumption that he'd keep it forever, that can be construed as a nether. If that's a nether, I regret having taken the nether. So then I tell the fellow, my dear friend, when you took the so-called nether, and you now came to regret the nether, if you would have known at the beginning when you took the so-called nether, that you would come to regret the nether, would you have ever taken the nether in the first place? The fellow presumably will say, no. I mean, it converted the charot into a pesach. So if you say three people, mutalach, 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 and it's okay. Again, I'm not saying it's necessarily required over here, but, you know, it's not so hard to do. So then maybe it's worthwhile for his guilty conscience, at least, to do it in that fashion. Question 15. A Jewish exterminator kills rodents for his livelihood. The easiest way for him is to drown the rodent. If not, he would have to drive 5 miles away to get rid of it. Can we consider this the Torah of Adam? Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. We do believe in Tzar Bale Chaim, absolutely. But Eilat Devasov, you know, there are those who want to outlaw Shechita nowadays. They say Tzar Bale Chaim. We say Chas V'Shalom to say that. Shechita is sanctioned by the Torah. We try to do it in a way which is not so painful to the animal, but what they call humane slaughtering. Afal Pekein, there's no doubt there's some kind of pain, but so what? Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, gave the world to man. If you read Bereishis Perek Aleph, we are the quote, the world is given to us to use the other parts of the world to enjoy and to satisfy our nutritional needs. And therefore, I believe in that case it's permissible. So to over here, the guys are schlepping so far away, and he has busy business here, he has a family here. He's not required to do that. Therefore, it's not viewed in halakhah as Tzar Bale Chaim any more than, I don't know, a person that has a roach in the house. He steps on the roach. It's not called Tzar Bale Chaim either because he doesn't want roaches running around the house, which is a legitimate thing. That's why they call in the exterminator here in the first place. So the same way as he's not required to schlep the 5 miles, so the housewife who steps on a roach is not required to pick up the roach and carry it 5 miles either. These are considered legitimate activities by a human being, and it's not just a wanton pain caused for an animal for no reason, and therefore it's permissible. Question number 16. May a husband play tennis and or ping pong with wife while she is in either? Interesting question. We know that you're not supposed to pass something to your wife, but here it's indirect. You say ping pong, so in some ways ping pong is more lenient than tennis, and some ways the other way around. Ping pong is more lenient because in the ping pong game, as I recall it, has to always go on a bounce. You're not allowed to hit back on a fly. On a bounce is more lenient. Tennis, you can hit on a fly, and therefore it's not as lenient as ping pong from that perspective. That's from that perspective. From the perspective of Kiruv Hadas, which the post can talk about, we shall see momentarily, and that is that ping pong is in much closer quarters. Tennis, you're far away, a whole tennis court in between you. So therefore, in that sense, tennis is more powerful than ping pong. So they both have a chumra and a kula. Rabbi Forth, Shalita, in his beautiful book on Hilchos Nida, he thinks that it shouldn't be done. If you look at his Tchelik Beis, page 40, it shouldn't be done. But he quotes in a footnote that the Der Moshe, the Der Bettina, thinks it's okay. So therefore, my bottom line is it's better to avoid. In the Shas Atchak, you can rely on the Rav who thinks it's all right, because it may not be a technical violation. Question 17. Can one rely on the many poskim who allow Tashmish Afilim Onas HaVeses by a case of Yotzal Derech? If yes, can the Rav please elaborate on what classifies as Yotzal Derech? How many days a week must he be away? Good question. This is not for me to decide. The Mechaber is Mekel in this Shiloh. The Ramah is Machmir, Machmir Tavol of Bracha. The Bari HaShulchan, Rav Chaim Kohen Shlita, there at the end of Sivkotan, Kuf Ayin Aleph, I believe it's Kuf Pei Dalet, is Mitzadeh, he suggests that if it's a Vestas She'eina Kavua, there's more room to be lenient. Most of our Vestas, almost all of our Vestas of our Flaga, are Eina Kavua. Only thing which is called Kavua for almost all women is what we call them an Ona Beninus. But almost all the Aflagas or Chodesh is Eina Kavua, and there is a Tzidun. And even though the Ramah says Tov HaMachah Tov LaBrocha, that may not apply to the classic case of Avetz She'enu Kavua. What's a Yotzal LaDerech? So there he writes in Sifkot Samachay, Yotzal LaDerech means it's not going to come back Toch Shir Ona. Now Shir Ona may depend on many considerations. This whole Sukkos and Gemara and Ksubis. The Gemara says Onas Tamat Chacham is once a week. Rav Moshe is a tshuva that nowadays Pischa tshuva is the same thing, maybe twice a week, and therefore I believe if the person is going to go away after tonight for three nights in a row, he's not going to be home, that might be qualified as a Yotzei L'Derech, to be makel by a Vesa She'ena Kavua, but less than that, not. And if it's Kavua, which is on the bend, it's hard to be makel, because the Ramos is Hamach Matavol or Bracha. Even Ena Kavua, where the Bali HaShulchan says maybe it can be makel, I think you have a right to be makel if you're away for the 3 days, because the Mechav is makel even by Kavua, and Ramos Tavol or Bracha may be restricted to a Kavua, not applied to an Ena Kavua. Question 18. Is there an amount of days between a flogger that a woman would not have to keep vest a flogger? So I had the Bali HaShulchan open in front of me. I opened the Kuf Pei test, Sifkot and Kuf Pei. What about a haflogger based on the Ramah there of 9 days? A 9-day haflogger, that's a very small haflogger. So I'm not going to go into all the million problems about this, but apparently you have to worry about if you have a very unusually short haflogger based on what the post have to say. It's 19. Are toys with batteries in them, which have a function even when the battery is off, considered muktzah on Shabbos? I believe the answer to that question is no. This toy could be used without any batteries. There happens to be a battery there. The battery is considered secondary to the toy. The toy needs not a battery to play with. And to make sure that the battery is off, or the motor is off, the switch is off, so that the toy is played with without the battery being put on. That's yes. But it's not intrinsically muktzah. It can be used without the battery. Question 20. Nowadays, must mezuzah still be checked twice in 7 years? Is there a difference if the mezuzah is on the front door where it's exposed to the heat and the cold? There certainly is a difference. Inside mezuzahs, the poskim say today, do not have to be checked. Because, number one, they're indoors. Number two, they're almost all wrapped in plastic or some saran wrap or something like that. And therefore, just leave them be. Once it was checked and it was good, don't start up with it. Just leave it there forever. If it's on the outside, then even though it's in a saran wrap and it's covered by a case, one could say that it's worthwhile checking twice every 7 years. I'm not sure it's an absolute requirement, given the fact that our mezuzahs, especially the good ones, are much more resilient and they're wrapped much more tightly. But if it's outdoors, twice every 7 years would probably be appropriate. But to make it an absolute chiyuv b'zman hazeh, I do not believe so. Okay, question number 21. The pinner of Tzipesach, the powdered milk is not included in the Gzer of Cholav Akum, being that one cannot create a powder from Cholav Tumen. Would the same apply to adding milk to chocolate or pastries like the pinner of the Zakan Aaron, only milk itself is in the Gzer? The answer is no. If you asked of Tzipesach Frank what he would say about milk, which is poured into another item, I do not believe he would say it's permissible. Even though in its present form right now, you can't do anything. It's just poured into a different kind of an item. You pour it into chocolate or pastries. Obviously, the chocolate and the pastries are not going to be made from pig's milk, but you could take pig's milk and put it into chocolate and pastries also. I do not believe that the Chief Pesach Kula would apply over here. Question 22. If one attended a simcha only in one of the following ways, can they still be considered panah chadashas at the Sheva Brachos? One, only attended the chuppah. Two, only came for the dancing. Three, only came to the suda. So look in the beautiful sefer, Konisum Kil Chosman. He says the answer to these questions are no, no, and no. Some b'toras vade, some b'toras suffix, suffix brachos lahakol. All these cases, you would not count this individual as a 23. Your day team at 344, Rosh Hashulchan said that this hesped is a chiyuv placed on the krovim. Do all of the krovim have a mitzvah to say their own hesped? Or is there a mitzvah for one hesped that is to be fulfilled by one of the krovim? The basic afkamina is, if one person already said a beautiful hesped that covers the nifter in a meaningful way, should another krov push himself to say another hesped, or is there no need? There is absolutely no need. In the olden days, what the Aruch HaShulchan is referring to is there's a chiyuv on the krovim to hire somebody. You hire sapdonim. They pay cash. They were professional maspidim. Today, we typically do not do that. We get someone to be maspid. and at some Leviath, every one of the children says a hesped. There's nothing intrinsically wrong with that. Frankly, I think it's more of a function of the community that the Leviah is consists of. In some places, long Leviah is a diriger. In some places, it's not. If a long Leviah is diriger, people are used to coming to a Leviah and sitting there for an hour or more. Fine. That's the minig, and you want to be mechaber the parents who passed away. So one person speaks for 15 minutes, and the people are expecting a Leviah for an hour. So, of course, the other person should, quote, push himself to say a hesped, give a bit of a different angle than the sibling gave earlier. But if people are used to short Leviahs, and they have one son and another, they could have 10 sons, and they're all going to talk, even though they speak well, if the people are really uncomfortable about it, they don't want to leave early because it's not so nice, but they can't stay so long, then it would be better for the other siblings not to speak. Again, it's very contextual. It depends on the kind of society and the kind of, and the person who passed away. If you go to the Vayat of Rosh Yeshivas, they go for hours and hours. And sometimes the Rebbetzin's also of those Rosh Yeshivas. I know in our yeshiva, when Rabbi David Zatzal passed away, Rabbi David Lifshitz, very long Levaya, and that was the tradition that they had, many, many Maspidim. Not necessarily relatives, others. So these things are very, very contextual. Some places they're very short. I know I was told Rav Amital, not more than half an hour. And so he was. There were three Aspedim, Rav Baran Zatzal, who was his Korosh Yeshiva for so many years, and his son and his son-in-law. And they talk us stuff to half an hour, so, you know, that was Rabban was a marich, but he respected the wishes of his colleague, and he spoke 10 minutes. Some circles is no made it. Just now, the late Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, known as Shia Twersky, the great chosheva Talmud Chacham, a psychiatrist, who helped so many people, gave a tzava, no hespedim. I saw one of the things, he circled it in Tzavah 5 times. No hespedim. And the family carried out his wishes. Absolutely no hespedim. And they sang his niggin, which he was part of the Tzavah. And Shia Samecha, it was his niggin. I saw a clip of it. It was very moving. They're carrying the mitzvah. And almost no one was invited to this Leviat. It was very responsible. And they're singing on Shia Samecha, no hespedim. Rabbi Yashav also said no hespedim. And it was his son-in-law said a couple of words, but basically no one spared him. We're not holding by such a madrega. Not everyone is required to make such a tzava. Some people think it's not right. Spared him are found in the Gemara. I remember the Netziv, in a letter to his son of Chaim Berlin, said, I know that those who have no spared him, I'm not such a person. If it says in the Gemara, spared him, should be spared him. But remember, don't be married so much. You learn Torah and you spread out my Torah. That's more important than his faith. So it depends upon the person who passed away, if he left any instructions. Depends upon the society in terms of how long Leviah is considered to be expected. Question number 24. Keshe Rechayim says, if a person who's dying already has said the appropriate psukim that I said by Yitzias Neshama, and the breathing started again, she said the psukim again. If the breathing started yet again, they recite the psukim from Rosh Hashanah Shemoneh Esrei. I haven't seen this in any of the pamphlets made for end-of-life tefillahs. Is this not accepted here in America? Perhaps Keshe Rechayim was only saying the minig Eretz Yisrael, or is simply not known, but should be done. I have to give an introduction over here. All these pamphlets and all these minhagim that are found in Keshe Rechayim and Ma'aseh Yavok and so many other of these works are not dinim. They're not halakas at all. You don't find it, you won't find it. You will not find it in Shas and early Poskim. You won't find it there. There are certain customs which arose in certain places. So we have a general rule. I call it a minig. Whatever the minig is, if in Eretz Yisrael they do it one way, in America they do it another way. And if someone has a minig, you don't say anything. Zero. Maybe you just say Shema Yisrael. That's also a minig. One cannot be bound by these, you know, these people found the Mavaya books, and they say A, B, C, D, E, some say Nishmas, whatever they say, these are all wonderful minhagim for places where these minhagim are kept. But the person shouldn't feel guilty if someone passed away and they didn't say they didn't have the Mavaya book with them, or the Gesher Achayim with them, or the Tillim with them, and they didn't say these things. No one should feel a guilty conscience. Nobody. You do, if someone is there by Yetzias Neshama, that is a skos. Omed b'tzad b'shas Yetzias Neshama, that is a big skos. As a matter of fact, the Gesher Achayim himself, the author of that sefer says that although, like the end of the Gemara, if someone is omed b'tzad b'shas Neshama, you have to rip kriya. Anybody? He says the custom fell into disuse. And the main reason he gives is because otherwise people are not going to want to be by Yetzias Neshama. They rip a shirt every time. So therefore, we don't do it anymore. It's important whenever we can. Now, obviously, Yetzias Neshama is not always predictable. But if it's, if the doctors say it's about to happen, it's appropriate that someone should stay in the room with the individual and should just sit there. You know, there's no need to say any of these things. I mean, again, you want to say them. I'm not against it, but it's important to know what's the ikar, what's the tefil. The ikar is to be there, and the tefil is to say what people say. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me the schus to be by Yetzias Neshama of my mother, Leah Shalom, and my father, Zichron Levracha, by both. I was a zoicher. My mother's situation, it was the middle of the night in the hospital, was nobody there. Nobody there but me. And it was a gradual, she was whatever it was, the lungs were filling up with water, and it was, the doctor said it's just a matter of time, and the nurses were very cooperative, they kept coming in, and not being an expert, I wasn't sure we were holding, and then she told me, you know, this is, she had passed away, so I wasn't going to start saying things before, saying things after. I was singing to her, which I thought was more important, that she may have still at some level of consciousness, and afterwards I just right away had to make a call to start the process to expedite the levaya. I don't remember saying anything. I remember everything clearly. My father was nifter. It was a different story. It was as opposed to the long and difficult cancer that my mother had. It was a cardiac arrest. No one chooses how HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes them, and they try to resuscitate. The EMTs kept trying and trying, and they said, you know, after half an hour, they're going to stop. That time I was there with my brother, with my son-in-law. He was saying Kriya Shema. We said Shema Yisrael. And sure enough, the breathing started again. They thought it started again. It was just from the chemicals that they had injected trying to resuscitate him. And that's what we said, Shema Yisrael. Those who want to say, oh, the program of Philip, I know the program that they give over there. It's found in the next question. They're not mandatory. It's customary, whatever custom you do. People should make sure that someone is there, whatever possible. The last question, 25. Kesher Chaim is the end of life, Chilas, Adon Olam, Yigdal, Ona Bekoach, Akenekaver, Tzilim 1:21-30:91. At the end of the Perek, how the Chilas should be said on Shabbos, and the Tzilim of Vizmer Shilayom on Shabbos, and the regular Tzilim, they would say on a weekday, 1:21-31:91, and they say, on the Bekoch, and Al Kenekava Shema, etc. My question, why didn't Gesher Achayim mention Yigdal Adon Olam, which are usually said on these tefillahs during the week? Are those skipped on Shabbos? Seems unusual that the Tzilim should be permitted on Shabbos, that Yigdal Adon Olam would be skipped? Again, the same thing. I can't say for sure what the Gesher Achayim's minig was. I do not believe that these minhagim are etched in stone. And if a person wants to keep the minig with Adon Olam and Yigdal, without Adon Olam and Yigdal, it's not of that such major consequence. And then we discuss this, we say the same end, that we say by Olavaya, we say this difficult week, the Klayus, so there's so many Gdolim, so many wonderful people passed away this past week. So I'd like to end this conference call, number 100, as they end by the Levayas, with Bila Mava Fanetach,
Amen. Thank you very much, Rebbe. We hope we can call upon you again in the near future. Take care. Bye. Take care.